It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. This morning, we'll hear about efforts underway throughout our region to help rural communities cope with the opioid epidemic.
We've debated on whether we want to put a harm reduction sticker on the side of the van. At this point, we just want to keep it a plain van.
Needle exchanges to Narcan training. Those stories in just a moment. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A battle over what was considered a protected body of water under the Clean Water Act remains murky following a ruling Thursday by a federal judge. That decision halted the Trump administration's attempt to repeal what's known as the Clean Water Rule. Nicole Irwin reports the ruling leaves the Ohio Valley split when it comes to stream protections.
Whether or not the federal government can regulate activity around some farm ponds, wetlands, and streams now depends on which state contains the waterway. The Trump administration has attempted to delay an Obama administration rule known as the Waters of the U.S., which aimed to clarify jurisdiction of the Clean Water Act. But a South Carolina district court ruled that the Trump administration did not follow the Administrative Procedures Act. Because of the federal ruling, Ohio will join 25 other states that accepts the Obama-era 2015 ruling. Kentucky and West Virginia waterways will be regulated by policy implemented in the 1980s, where other district court injunctions remain in place. Environmental groups like the Kentucky Waterways Alliance hailed the decision. Executive Director Ward Wilson says the fight isn't over.
We would like to keep the Clean Water Rule. We think it protects all our waters, and we need to do that. The administration is trying to move quickly to remove this protection. It was crafted over years with a lot of scientific input and public input.
A federal judge cited the lack of public input reviewed by the EPA to repeal the rule in the injunction decision. Parties on both sides expect an appeal. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Nicole Irwin.
If you're a night owl struggling with your weight, you may want to consider becoming an early bird instead. Kara Lofton reports a new study has found people with pre-diabetes who have an evening preference have a higher body mass index than those who do things earlier in the day.
Prediabetes is a condition in which blood sugar levels are higher than normal, but not yet type 2 diabetes. The study compared patients with prediabetes who go to bed, eat meals, and are more active and alert later in the day, with those who do those things earlier in the day. They found that patients with an evening preference have a higher body mass index than those with a morning preference. Researchers say the difference in weight is likely related to night owls not getting enough sleep. Insufficient sleep has been linked to higher weight and the risk of developing diabetes. Since patients with prediabetes are already at very high risk for developing type 2 diabetes, modifying time of day preference could be a way to reduce that risk. Almost a quarter of West Virginia adults have either prediabetes or diabetes. The study was published this month in the journal Frontiers of Endocrinology. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Kara Lofton.
Drug overdose deaths in the Ohio Valley continue to rise. And so do the risks of infectious diseases closely associated with needle drug use. Area health officials say the region's opioid crisis is now a public health threat on multiple fronts. Aaron Payne reports that health groups with different specialties are teaming up and taking to the road to meet the challenge.
Firmly press the plunger, and that will administer the dose.
A pharmacy student from the University of Kentucky demonstrates how to administer naloxone, the opioid overdose reversal medication, to a room of about 20 people at the Letcher County Health Department in Whitesburg, Kentucky. Among them is 18-year-old Morgan Hopkins. She's at the training because, as an aspiring therapist, she wants to be ready with naloxone if someone overdoses around her.
You never know what you're going to see if anything goes wrong, you have it rather than you don't have it.
According to data from the Kentucky Office of Drug Control Policy, 1,565 people died of fatal overdoses last year statewide, up about 11% from 2016, and seven of those people were in rural Letcher County. At the same event, Hopkins and her mother are tested for HIV and hepatitis C. Hopkins thinks screenings like these should be routine.
Especially with the hepatitis going around and everything, it's getting really bad, and it's always good to keep up. It's never anything to be ashamed of to come get testing done.
As distressing as the rise in overdose deaths has been, it's just one of many grim statistics associated with the opioid epidemic. Health officials say parts of the Ohio Valley are also at high risk for needle-borne disease.
With the opioid epidemic comes, you know, blood-borne pathogens, hepatitis C, HIV, amongst many other things as well.
That's Matt Brewer, Outreach Director for AIDS Volunteers Incorporated, also known as AVOL, in Lexington. AVOL and other organizations around the Ohio Valley have teamed up to address the multifaceted health challenges presented by the opioid epidemic. The state's mobile pharmacy unit distributed Narcan, a nasal spray version of naloxone, to those who received the training at the Whitesburg event. Jody Jaggers works with the mobile pharmacy as the director of pharmacy emergency preparedness.
For the public, this is almost tantamount to learning CPR. If you want to be the kind of person that's just ready to help another person in the community.
The State Department of Health and Pharmacists Association created the mobile pharmacy in 2008 as a place to safely administer medication to displaced victims of Hurricane Gustav. Jaggers says when the state legislatures in Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia changed the way naloxone is regulated, the mobile unit became a way to get the life-saving drug into more remote regions.
Part of what it did was it allowed pharmacists to be able to distribute and dispense Narcan to anybody that requested it via physician protocol.
Near the end of last year, the State Cabinet for Family Health Services estimated the mobile pharmacy had distributed around 1,300 doses of naloxone. Another mobile clinic works to give people access to resources addressing the blood-borne pathogens associated with needle use. AVOL secured a $100,000 grant from the Elton John Foundation to purchase a mobile testing van to take their services to rural eastern Kentucky. Brewer says it allows them to reach high-risk people who could not normally get to HIV and hepatitis screenings.
We meet people exactly where they're at, whether they are currently using or someone who engages in sex work. We help them tailor a harm reduction plan. It's like, if you're going to do this, this is the safest way to do it.
The clinic on wheels is a necessary asset in AVOL's uphill fight against bloodborne disease in rural Kentucky.
Kentucky currently leads the nation in viral hepatitis C infections, and it's prime real estate for an HIV epidemic as well.
The AVOL van, the emergency pharmacy, and the other organizations involved in the Whitesburg event created a one-stop shop for those wanting to tackle the opioid crisis in their community. If recent statistics are any indication, those services will be in even greater demand. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Aaron Payne.
The Ohio Valley Resource is a public media partnership covering the region's economic transition and is made possible with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. The first county health department in the state to offer a mobile harm reduction program is in Wyoming County in southern West Virginia. It includes a traveling needle exchange that allows drug users to turn in used needles and get clean ones. And it goes to some of the county's most rural and isolated areas. As Molly Bourne reports, choosing the location has been the hardest part.
Fred Cox and his team are setting up on a gravel shoulder off the side of the road, like where you might see someone selling summer vegetables. There's a white tent, a table, some chairs, and brown paper bags piled in crates. It may not look like it, but this is the Wyoming County Health Department's mobile harm reduction unit. It includes a needle exchange.
We park at a wide spot in the road at Allen Junction, and we've made inroads with some of the folks, and a lot of times they're there waiting on us.
It's about 12:30 on a Friday afternoon in July. There's no one here yet, but after a few minutes, a car pulls up and the people inside ask for some supplies. Then a couple comes around the curve in the road and walks up.
You want me to fill this out?
Whatever you need.
Oh, okay.
Hold on, you want me to do it?
Oh, I got it.
Y'all doing okay?
Yeah, y'all been doing good.
They're willing to talk, even to a reporter, about their struggle with addiction.
I have been doing drugs since I was like 18. Quit there for a while, went to rehab, and then relapsed.
That's Rebecca. She's 35, and it's her fifth time visiting the van since May.
Nobody's ever done something like this. It's my health, and I want to make sure I stay healthy, even though I'm doing stupid stuff.
She and her fiancé, John, both inject heroin. He's 28.
Now there's nowhere near as many people sharing needles and passing the same needle back and forth for each of them to use.
John says just the night before, a friend overdosed, and he had to revive her with the Narcan spray he got from an earlier visit to the van. He just found out a friend is HIV positive. John isn't, but he says he shared needles with that guy several times before the diagnosis.
And if it wasn't for this program, I wouldn't be forced to, because nobody forced me, but I would want to use his needle just so that I could get up. That's how an addict's thinking is. Even though we know they have HIV, I would still use his needle if it wasn't for them giving us clean needles, because I would not want to be sick and hurting.
Wyoming County in southern West Virginia is among a group of counties in central Appalachia that are especially vulnerable to the rapid spread of HIV or hepatitis C. That's mainly because of intravenous drug use. Fred Cox from the health department says that in most years, the county sees no new HIV cases. But last year, it experienced what he calls a cluster of them. The state says it won't give out county-level HIV numbers because there are so few cases. There were 57 new HIV cases last year in the 15 West Virginia counties thought to be most vulnerable to the spread of HIV and Hep C. Wyoming County bought and customized the van with an $80,000 grant from the State Department of Health and Human Resources. It goes out every Friday to two locations in the county for at least a half hour in each spot. The county started going out in April, but didn't get any clients until the next month. The van is white and unmarked.
We've debated on whether we want to put a harm reduction sticker on the side of the van. At this point, we just want to keep it a plain van. Thank you.
Keeping a low profile is important. Rebecca says no one using drugs would want to get these services at the health department in Pineville, the county seat. From Allen Junction, the first site, Pineville's a half hour away, and that's a long drive here. And the health department is next to the courthouse.
No drug addict's going to want to do that.
Cox and his team chose the two locations they currently drive to based on the at-risk populations living there. They tried another small community first. That's where Christy Seaton says her parents live.
There's no police force there. It's kind of in a rural area. The police response time when you call for any other issue is kind of a long time. And if there happened to be an issue there, you know, it might take the police force a little while to get there. Some of the people that are using this program, you know, are not the kind of people you want in your neighborhood.
Seaton's a councilwoman in Mullins. That's another city in Wyoming County. She believes in the needle exchange and even suggested the health department move it to her town. But she has some concerns about the two current locations.
I just think if they're going to offer that program, maybe it should be somewhere more in the public and not so much in the rural communities, which I know that's what they're trying to focus on. But I just think it needs to be thought of better.
Cox says there haven't been any safety issues. Needle exchange sites have been controversial in West Virginia, but at least two nonprofits already operate mobile needle exchange programs elsewhere, and a third is expected to start later this year. The Wyoming County Health Department is the first government agency in the state to provide the services in a mobile unit. It's mid-afternoon and sweltering as the team sets up in Long Branch, an especially rural part of the county, about 40 minutes from the health department. They pull into a lot, people are outside walking around, and they're staring at the van. It's the mobile unit's first time here, and Cox has to start by building trust. He walks over to a nearby porch and explains, before they even fully set up, why they're here.
And our ultimate goal, to be honest with you, is if over at some point in time you decide that you'd like to get into recovery, we will hope that you will do that at some point. And we want to make you healthy, or keep you healthy enough long enough to do that. Does that make sense?
With Fred Cox are Gina Carter and Crystal Simpson, both nurses. They can do Hep C and HIV tests on site. One woman here gets a blood test and the answer to a question that has nagged her for a long time, whether her previous drug use left her with any chronic infections.
We've always wondered. I could have cried when I found out it was negative.
She didn't know what to make of the van at first.
You can talk to anybody and they'll tell you Long Branch. At Long Branch, get what you want. There's some really good people here, and this program would help a lot of people.
It would help?
A lot. Because a lot of these people really don't have the money to go buy new needles. So that right there would help quit spreading diseases.
As of last week, the van has served 50 people. And starting this fall, Wyoming will share it with Summers, Mercer, and McDowell counties. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Molly Bourne in Wyoming County.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glenys Board. I'm Teresa Wills.